Hey guys, it's Mackenzie here. Welcome back to our podcast channel. Today, I wanted to take a moment to talk to you about violence and de-escalation techniques. So first, I'm going to start out with some statistics, and then we will get into the most important part, de-escalation. So starting out, thousands of people experience youth violence every day. While the extent and types of youth violence vary across communities and demographic groups, youth violence negatively impacts youth in all communities. Youth violence is common, and it's more common than I was thinking it was. Nearly 1 in 5 high school students reported being bullied on school property in the last year, and 1 in 7 were electronically bullied. So that could be texting, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or other forms of social media. Youth violence kills and injures. Homicide is the third leading cause of death for young people ages 10 to 24. Each day, about 13 young people are victims of homicide, and about 1,100 are treated in emergency departments for non-fatal assault-related injuries. Youth violence is also costly. So youth homicides and non-fatal physical assault-related injuries result in more than $20 billion annually in combined medical and lost productivity costs alone. And that is not including costs associated with the criminal justice system, psychological and social consequences for victims, perpetrators, and their families, or costs incurred by communities. Youth violence has serious and long-lasting effects on the physical, mental, and social health of young people. It is a leading cause of death for young people and results in more than 400,000 non-fatal injuries each year. The impact of youth violence goes beyond physical consequences. Adverse childhood experiences like youth violence are associated with negative health and well-being outcomes across the life course. Youth violence increases the risk for behavioral and mental health difficulties, including future violence, perpetration, and victimization, smoking, substance abuse, obesity, high-risk behaviors, depression, academic difficulties, school dropouts, and things related to that. Youth violence doesn't only affect youth, it also affects entire communities. So violence increases healthcare costs, it decreases property value, it disrupts social services. Youth violence negatively impacts perceived and actual safety, participation in community events, school attendance, and viability of businesses. Addressing the short and long-term consequences of violence strains community resources and limits the resources that states and communities have to address other needs. Okay, so now that I've given you guys some facts on violence, we're going to talk about how can we stop violence before it starts. So, strategy approach promote family environments that support healthy development. So parenting skills and family relationship programs, providing quality education in early life. So preschool enrichment within family engagement, strengthening youth skills, connecting youth to caring adults and activities such as a mentoring program, maybe counseling, an after-school program, creating protective community environments, modifying the physical and social environment, reduce exposure to community-level risks, street outreach, and community norm change, intervene to lessen harms and prevent future risk. So treatment to lessen the harms of violence exposures, treatment to prevent problem behavior and further involvement in violence, hospital community partnerships, law enforcement partnerships with community, things like that. So now we're going to look at when to de-escalate. What are some signs that you think someone is going to be violent? So de-escalation techniques are most successful when used early before physical aggression actually happens. So to do this, you have to spot the early signs of agitation, such as, I'll give you some examples. If someone's balling up their fists, if they're fidgeting, if they're shaking, if they're eyeballing another person, if they're thrusting their head forward, clenching their jaw, if their speech becomes more rapid or high-pitched, those are some early signs of agitation and they should not be ignored. So some de-escalation techniques are appear calm and self-assured, so make sure you're not displaying the same signs of agitation that can be seen in the person that is showing signs of agitation. So unclench your fists, don't hold eye contact, avoid standing square to the escalated person. Maintaining a neutral facial expression. So even our eyebrows can indicate when we're surprised or angry. And similarly, our mouths can betray our emotions unwittingly. Another natural reaction we often have when under stress is to smirk or giggle. I know that is my natural response to fear, is I either smirk or I laugh. So in those situations, you need to make sure you control that, because that could be portrayed as you're making fun of the person. So allow them space. So entering a person's personal space can be useful to refocus on a task when the situation is calm. But when the person is agitated, this can indicate aggression and escalate the situation even more. So keeping your distance away will also keep you safe, and this person, or should this person become physically aggressive. Another de-escalation technique is control your breathing. So this one would probably be the first one that I would use. That is probably the easiest de-escalation technique. So when we're stressed, angry, or tense, our breathing becomes more shallow and rapid. If we take deeper, slower breaths, this will not only keep us calm, but the person who is becoming agitated will begin to match our own breathing pattern as well. It can sometimes help to match this person's breathing initially and then help them gradually slow it down. There are verbal strategies to de-escalate situations also. Lowering your voice and keeping your tone even. So it's hard to have an argument with someone who is not responding back to you aggressively. So if you're calm and you're controlling your breathing and you're saying, "I understand," and you're not arguing back with this person, it will de-escalate it immensely. Distraction and diversion are extremely useful. So when a person's becoming aggressive, it's their own response with their own fight or flight instincts, and they're not thinking about their actions in the moment. So distract them and engage their brain, perhaps like changing the subject or commenting on something that's happening outside the window. Give them choices, repeat these using the broken record technique if necessary. Do not get drawn into secondary behaviors such as arguing back, and these are designed to distract or upset you. Acknowledging the escalated person's feelings shows that you have listened to them, and this can be crucial when diffusing a situation. I'll give you an example. It must be really difficult for you. Thanks for letting me know that you feel this way. Things like that. Other words and phrases that could be useful when de-escalating would be, "I wonder if," "let's try this," "it seems like you're feeling this way because," "maybe we can," and then tell the escalated person what you want them to do rather than what you do not want them to do. So, for example, "I want you to sit down" versus "stop arguing with me." Give this escalated person take-up time following any direction and avoid backing them into a corner, and that could be verbally or physically. And then here are some things to avoid. Do not make threats you cannot carry through, such as threatening to exclude this person from something. Do not be defensive or take it personally. What's being said may seem insulting or directed at you, but this level of aggression is not really about you, it's about the situation. Do not use humor unless you are sure it will help and you have a very good relationship with the person that is escalated. Do not use sarcasm or humiliate the escalated person. Sometimes, no matter how carefully and skillfully you try to de-escalate a situation, it still might reach a crisis point. And in a crisis point, if you're at school, you should know your school systems for summoning help and moving bystanders to safety. So after any outburst or incident, always make time to debrief, repair, and rebuild, or the relationship will flounder and continue to deteriorate. So problem solving is a big helper in this situation, and you can teach new behaviors where needed. Resolving conflicts is one of the most important skills to model. So We have a bunch of resources for further information that I'm going to link below this podcast link. So you can also look those up, and there's more de-escalation techniques. We just outlined some of the most important and useful ones. And we will also have a second episode in this violence and de-escalation series, and Jordan will be covering that soon. So thank you very much for coming to our podcast episode, and I hope you guys have a great week and weekend, and have a good day, guys. See ya.